This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Over the last several years, we have intermittently been talking about different theaters where magicians perform. I know that a lot of us are looking for our own venues or would like to have our own theaters where we could have people come to see our show. We have talked about some of those theaters in the past and some of the theater owners as well who book other magicians who come in to work. Well, a couple of those entrepreneurs have had some ideas, and I spoke with them in their infancy stage, when they were still putting the brick and mortar together. Basically, they just had the pieces of paper that showed the plans of what they were doing. One was Danny Archer, who has the Magic Arts Center out in Philadelphia. And that was something a couple of years ago. We talked with him about the plans that he had, he and his partner Marty, to put this thing together. And they have now been running this for several months, and it's been very successful. And so I thought it'd be interesting to kind of have a follow-up to find out what they have done and some of the trials and tribulations, I guess, that they had in getting it together and the permitting and everything. But more importantly, what is it that makes it a success right now, and what are they doing to put butts in the seats and basically trying to sell tickets? I have the same question as I went back then to talk with John Sturck about the Chicago Magic Lounge. That was one that was very successful as well, that again, I talked with both Joey Cranford, who's one of the owners, and John Sturck, and they told me about what their plans were. Well, that really blossomed so successfully that they now have opened their own venue. They used to be part of another thing, as part of a burlesque show, and there were other things going on there throughout the week. They now have their own venue, and it is just phenomenal there in Chicago, called the Chicago Magic Lounge. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting again to go back and do a little reprise to kind of see where they are right now, what they've done, and their success as well. So this week we're going to talk with the theater owners of a couple of these different places. I said, first we're going to be talking with Danny Archer, and then we're going to be talking with John Sturck. And in future weeks, we are maybe going to get together with some of the theater owners of other places across the country. Because one of the things I think it's interesting that Danny Archer talks about is that he is the president of a magic theater association, basically. And unbeknownst to me, apparently there are like 50 members across the country. I know there are a lot of theaters, people who are four-walling, and I know that there have been some suggestions that some of you listeners have sent to me saying, hey, you need to talk with this company or these guys or this theater or this in this city or at this hotel, they've got such and such going on, or hey, you missed out, you should have been talking with this other guy because his theater is phenomenal. Well, I appreciate your thoughts, and if you'll send those suggestions to me, that's scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. I'll try to get around to talking with some of those guys. I know they have an interesting story to tell, and there seems to be more and more of these theaters popping up. I just had read about another one called The House of Cards, which is in Nashville, that had recently opened, and perhaps I'll get around to talking with the owners of that venue then as well. But first, let me welcome this week Mr. Danny Archer here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of go back sometimes in these podcasts to revisit with some people who had started something and just to kind of get a status update to see how they're doing. Well, one of them is my good friend Danny Archer, and he is the proprietor and co-owner, I guess. He's going to correct me if I'm wrong on this, on the Smoke and Mirrors Theater. Hey there, Danny.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good, thank you. So is that right? You're the proprietor and co-owner. Is that right? You and Marty have this, the Smoke and Mirrors?
It's Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. The word magic, we feel, was important to put that into the to the word so someone knows what we're trying to do. But you are correct. We're the owners of the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater in Philadelphia, PA.
Right. Now, again, I wanted to follow up on this because when we first talked about this, in fact, that was in December of 2016, I believe. And the interesting thing was when I was looking back at the website just to kind of refresh myself with this, that it was showing just some pictures of the plans you had and just the open room and, you know, and nothing, you know, basically. And of course, in our conversation, we were talking about how this was going to be built out. It was going to first be a theater and then a magic shop and then eventually then with the Magic Arts Center having the school and everything then too. So tell me, where are we and what's progressed and what have you got that's completed over there?
Well, we are built. We are open. We did our first show August 18th of 2017. And we've been rolling ever since. We do, because we're new, you know, we're still trying to find our audience and let people know about what we're doing. So right now, currently, we're doing two shows a week. We do a show on a Friday night, a show on a Saturday night, and then we will do a show for a family audience about every other week is the schedule that we're running on right now.
I remember that Joe Given told me about his Theater of Dreams there in Castle Rock, Colorado, that they also rent that out like for luncheons or for throughout the week for businesses as well. Do you do the same thing?
We are, and that is starting to become a big part of the business. You know, we are very fortunate. Our venue, I know Joe's venue, which is great. It's beautiful. But we have something that he doesn't have is that we have two 60-seat theaters in my venue.
Wow.
The one is the pictures that most people have seen of the tiered seating. There's, you know, are there other rooms like this in America? Probably, but there are not many that are built like this. And no one, you know, I've had a number of guys come in and play the room so far and said, oh my God, this is some of the finest conditions for the performer that they've, you know, ever worked in. Mm-hmm. But we have a second 60-seat theater, and that room, we call it the Little Theater, named after Bob Little, local Philadelphia area magician. And that room, it's a flat seating. The audience is flat in the floor. There's a raised stage, so it's a different feel to the room. But we can put chairs in there and comfortably sit a full 60 people and do a meal or a special type of event. So we are starting to get more and more of those type of events booked as people, you know, find out what we do and where we are and what we can do for them.
How do you let them know about that? That's, you know, I just had someone ask me just here, not more than within the last 24 hours, they were looking back for a podcast that I had posted talking about selling tickets and that kind of a thing. So how do you market that? I mean, because I know that you're not really in the middle of a big strip mall or someplace that's kind of on the beaten path. You kind of have to take a train a little bit to go outside Philly a little bit. So how do you get
we
people there?
We were just outside the border of Philly, and that is the trickiest part of everything is how do you let people know what you're doing? The
exactly.
Number one best thing that you can do is put out great product. The shows that we do, when people, you know, the show's over and the audiences, you know, a lot of times the shows are getting standing goes, the people have leapt to their feet, they're clapping. When they come into that room, they're just like, we could see the looks on their faces. Oh my God, I didn't know this place existed. I'm coming back. I'm bringing my friend. So that's the number one thing any business can do is have a product or service that's so good that when your consumer is finished, they want to come back again. They want to tell other people.
Right.
But that won't do it. You know, right now I tell people, you know, we're talking about magic. I said, we are in the golden age of magic right now. Look at your watch this second. This is the golden age of magic. But this is also the golden age of advertising. There are more ways to spend your advertising dollar than you could possibly imagine because all the traditional advertising medias of TV, radio, print, billboards, that type of thing are still here. Then add to that mix the internet, a little thing called the internet,
right,
which has gazillions of different websites. You know, like we do shows for families. Well, the one advertising I'm doing is that reaching the family advertisers. So I have to advertise. So it's really complicated to figure out how and where to spend your advertising budgets. One of the best things that we are doing, which is, again, is inexpensive, is networking events. When I go to networking events, and, you know, you get a chance to stand up or meet people. What do you do? Oh, I'm in insurance. Everyone does something, you know, the same or sort of boring. And then yeah. I pop in. Oh, I'm the co-owner of the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. What? Where? What? And that I've already booked several corporate buyouts. I've had people buy 20 tickets to come to the show. So those type of things can be, you know, can be gold. But it's there. It's like anything else. You've got to work at it. What do you find?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's certainly a job. It's business. I mean, that's the show business. That's the 2/3 of the show business is getting the butts in the seat and everything. Now, talk about networking. So where do you find those kinds of organizations? I mean, I know there are networking groups for everything. It seems like whatever your interest might be. But are you talking about like Rotary Clubs and Lions Clubs, JCs, Toastmasters and that kind of thing, or specific things where it might be alumni groups from universities or things like that? Any and all of the above?
We will try almost anything. One couple things that we've done is we've joined the Chamber of Commerce, our local Chamber of Commerce. There's two other chambers that want me to join as well because, you know, we're in an area where we probably have, you know, in a, say, a 20-mile radius of the theater, probably 6 million people. So there's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
So the Chamber of Commerce is one. We just joined the Valley Forge Tourism Board, which does nothing. It's not a chamber. It just promotes events and the members in Montgomery County. That's the county that we're located in. So we just joined that organization. There are all kinds of there's meetup groups that you can go to that have networking or gatherings. There's just LATIP. There's BNB, business to B2B, business to business groups. There's independents. Most of them will have you out for the first time for free to come. And normally, because of what I do is fun, they'll have me back whenever I want to go to these
because you obviously groups. Perform, I guess, do a little close-up or strolling or say, hey, yeah, let me show you what I do.
Do a little something for the group because it's just, you know, so different. Oh, do you want to see a trick? Oh, you do want to see a trick. Oh, okay. So I'll just do something, you know, quick and dramatic. And it's just, you know, so that's what we've been doing. You know, traditional advertising is great as well. We do some of that. As well, but it all determines, you know, how long you've been in business, what are you trying to do? You know, we're a new theater, so my goal at this point is brand awareness. I want to let people know there's a place called the Smoke and Mirrors Theater. It literally, one time, I happened to be in a restaurant, and I had on my bowling shirt. I have this bowling shirt on. It has a playing cards on it. And a guy said, oh, nice shirt. Are you a magician? I said, no. He says, oh, do you ever hear about that magic theater? And the guy asked me about it. I said, I have heard about that place. I'm the co-owner of the theater. That was the only time I have mentioned it to somebody that has said, yes, I have heard of that. Most of the time I'm telling people, and it's constantly. We had a woman come to our show the other night. She goes, I can't believe this place is here. She goes, I live a mile away. Never heard of this. Well, again, we're only in business for, you know, a little over 6 months. So I'm not surprised. I would be more surprised if she had heard of it.
Right. No, I think that's right. It's just going to be taking a while. Plus, another thing is that sometimes there is that familiarity, I guess, with an area that you just overlook something. I mean, all of us drive past businesses all week long when we're going back and forth to work or wherever, and we overlook something, and someone tells about a restaurant or a dry cleaners or something. Well, that's just down the street. Well, I passed that a million times and never thought of it. So that's another thing then, certainly, too. You told me before, earlier here, when we had chatted before the we started the recording about how really you're not doing magic anymore and your main job really is a ticket hawker, I guess.
Ticket schlepper is the term I used. You know, someone said to me, oh, you're a magician. I said, no. They said, you're not a magician. I said, no, I'm a ticket schlepper. That's what I do now. My job is I get up in the morning, I go to my my screen that tells me what's going on with ticket sales, and I'm able to see real time who bought a ticket overnight, what tickets did they get. So yeah, my job is now to sell tickets and, you know, perform as well too. I love performing in the theater. It's just such an absolute joy. It's really, you know, our website is smokeandmirrorstheater.com. We have a little video on there. There's a couple of pictures, but I will tell you this, after talking to numerous people that have seen the pictures online and then saw the theater in real life, the pictures do not do justice to what the place looks like in real life. I've just heard that enough from people just saying, as good as I thought our pictures were, they said, when you see it in the flesh, it's just so much more impressive.
Man, maybe you need to come and bring in a professional photographer who could do a 360 or something or some sort of a video.
We've done that. We had a videographer come in. We're going to get ready to update that. I now have a great photographer, John, that comes in and shoots our shows now. So we're starting to develop some good marketing materials. But it's there's just not enough hours in the day to do everything you have to do when you own your own venue. And
right.
When you perform in your own venue.
Yeah, when it's kind of a small group and just the two of you then also. Now, as far as the performers go, now you say both of those are 60 seats theaters. Are they like, a parlor type and stage and not close up, or is it a combination of all three?
Well, the main theater is parlor / close up. We had, I don't know if your people know Jason LaDani, a card guy.
Yep.
And when we were booking Jason, he travels, he does small theaters, 100 seats, that kind of venue or less. He carries his own video equipment, camera and screen, because he sits down at the table, old school style, and performs seated card magic. That's what he does for his act. Mm-hmm. We got to the theater. He looked at it. He says, "Oh my God, I can leave my equipment in the back." I said, "I put a card in the table. They can see it's the Five of Hearts from the back row."
Yeah.
So not a lot of venues have that capability. And I've had other people that have been there and said, "Oh my God, I can do real close up. I can sit down at the table and perform, you know, and do some true close up magic." So that's the main theater. The other theater, it's 90% finished. We've had events in there. Like we had a juggler. We had a private party and someone wanted, in addition to magic, they wanted a juggler. Well, the juggler, we have a 14-foot ceiling height there. So he was on a unicycle doing stuff on the stage that he would not have been able to do in our other theater. But the second theater would be more of a stand up venue. It would not be close up. You cannot put a card in the table. They would not be able to see what that card is in the back of the room.
It's a longer theater as opposed to kind of being wider, I guess.
No, similar in size. It's just the way we don't have tiered seating.
The way it's configured. Oh, I see. That makes sense.
Has extreme tiered seating. I mean, by the time you're in the back row, the feet of the person in the back row are about 7.5 feet above the level of the floor. That's how elevated they are to get the right rake so they would be able to see properly.
Right.
And the
right.
second one, it's, you know, it's the stage is elevated about 2 feet and the audience is flat. So it's just different conditions.
More of the standard type that you're used to when you go to a banquet room in a hotel or something, kind of a thing.
Exactly. And that's the room, you know, we have, we're also getting involved with a theater troupe. The theater troupe saw that back theater and said, "Oh my God, we do plays for an audience of that size. We could squeeze a few more people in there." So we're getting involved with the Gypsy Stage Theater Company that's going to be doing theatrical productions in the back room.
Right, right. Well, in getting to the type of performers, I mean, I'm familiar with Jason LaDani. In fact, I've got him booking him on a lecture tour coming up in June, and I saw him.
Guys, listening, fabulous. Go see him. He's really good.
He is good. I saw him at the Columbus Magi Fest earlier this year, and he was not part of it. He was just hanging out and attending, but he was one of the people that you kept hearing about saying, "Did you see that guy sitting at a table over there doing such and such?" I mean, he really was a standout attendee. If he could and should have perhaps been one of the performers and probably will be in future years at Magi Fest. And so, yeah, I'm excited. We do have a lot of cities who have booked him already, but, yeah, I know he's going to be good. But the reason I'm bringing it back up then again is just to say that's the quality of people it sounds like that you are booking there. And along that line, for those who feel as if that they are qualified, who do they contact? They get hold of you, or what kinds of acts are you looking for, and how do they get with you?
Well, that's a funny question, and I'm laughing because we get probably two or three almost on a weekly basis of someone saying, "Oh, I heard about your theater, book me." And I will be 100% honest with you, not one of those persons have yet been booked at the theater. And the reason, well, I don't want to say, you know, obviously to me, it's we as a theater, that's my product. You know,
yeah.
If you sell pizza, people got to go in there and say, "Man, that was some good pizza. I'm coming back." I can't have people come out and say, "That show was okay. That show was there." I need them to come out and be leaping and dancing, which means I need great shows, which means I need great talent. I had a guy that called me up the other day. "Oh, I want to work the theater. How do these dates look?" I said, "What do you mean, how do these dates look? I don't know you. I haven't seen your stuff." He says, "Oh, I'm wonderful." I said, "Dude, yeah. I get so many calls like that." I said, "I'm hoping you're the one. Be the one that I call up and say, 'You're fabulous. Let me book you.'" I said, "If you are, you will be the first." So, because I'll just, you know, I'll name a couple of the names of people that we've had. We've had Will Fern. We've had Chris Capehart, Peter Samuelson, David Corsaro, Garrett Thomas, Nathan Kranzo, Brian Curry, Rocco. We've had Rocco a couple of times. Keith Fields, Hannibal, Scott Alexander. Upcoming, we've got, and I'm leaving some names out.
Yeah.
We have Jeff McBride. We have Ozzie Wynn. Harrison Greenbaum destroyed. Ben Seidman came in and killed recently. So we're John Stetson, Kreskin. We've had the amazing Kreskin. So we're really trying to keep the Francis Minotti. Trying to keep the quality up. And I say to the people out there that are saying, well, I want to work the theater. I said, if your act is as good as theirs, please get in touch with me right away because I'd love to have you.
Yeah.
I really would.
And what's your email address to get hold of you there?
info@smokeandmirrorstheater.com. And is A-N-D and theater is traditional spelling E-R.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, info@smokeandmirrorstheater.com.
Okay. I understand and empathize exactly what you're saying, because I recall when Scott Hollingsworth, as the entertainment director for the Magic Island here in Houston, used to say people would contact him and he would book acts, and he would say, if I had an act that was going to be hit and miss, and when they hit, they would be the most incredible that people would talk about for years, and when they miss, people would walk out just shaking their head saying, wow, that was a waste of money, or having someone who is just constantly good, you know, that just hits all the time and is not spectacularly great, but is good and something that people will talk about positively. I would rather have that second rather than the first, you know.
Totally agreed, because my feeling is for the ticket-buying public, the number one problem that I have is, you think about it this way. I own a theater that puts on magical entertainment. Mm-hmm. When a customer goes to my website, they've now heard about the theater. A friend went, oh my God, it was phenomenal. You got to go. Here's the website. So now the customer goes to my website and they look over the list of names and they say, I don't know any of these names. And then this was encapsulated in a phone call I got about a couple of weeks ago. A guy calls up. He says, hey, I'm having problems. I'm at your website. I said, hold on. Let me jump on the website. I'll help you out. I'm thinking he's having a problem completing his purchase for a ticket.
Yeah.
So I said, you having problems buying your ticket? He said, no. I said, oh, what's your problem? He says, I don't know who any of these people are. I want to come, but I don't know which show I should buy a ticket for.
Yeah.
So I talked to him a little bit, and we decided, you know, on what he was doing, and we recommended a show. But that locked it into my mind. What his experience is what probably 99% of the people to go to my website, their experience is they want to buy a ticket. They heard it's really fun, but they don't know any of these performers. So it's a real weird thing to sell entertainment. And people are buying it not knowing what they're buying.
Well, no, you're right. There again, going back just to an analogy with the Magic Island, from the standpoint that they were selling magic. It didn't matter. You know, it was kind of interchangeable. And I remember talking to Jeff Hobson about that some years ago about Spellbound, that was the idea that it was supposed to be kind of plug and play there in Las Vegas, that it didn't matter if it was Mark Kalin or him or whoever else, but basically people were not coming to see Jeff Hobson. They were coming to see magic. And so basically you're trying to sell magic as an entertainment. And I think that, which is why they split off and end up doing something completely different, which is a whole different story. But he was, the point is, I think that you're right there, Danny, that you're selling magic as entertainment, and the audience, for the most part, 99% of the people, don't know anyone more than just the one or two people who are in the current social vernacular, who might be David Blaine, Chris Angel, maybe David Copperfield. That's about it. That's about as deep as the audience. And so they're looking on your site saying, I wonder if Chris Angel's going to be there this weekend or something. They don't know Jason LaDany or Peter Samuelson, some of the other names who are spectacular that you've mentioned. So yeah, the focus should be, I guess, just on selling magic. And that's the difficult hurdle to get over.
It is. It really is. It's really interesting. I know there's, you know, many other theaters out there. They're all handling it in a different way. But yeah, the public's perception. I have come up with what I call the five magician test. You could walk up to any layman and say, "Here's a $100 bill. Hand him $100."
Yeah.
Say if you could name five living magicians, you get to keep that $100. Your $100 will be safe.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Your $100 will be safe, believe me.
Now, along this line then also, as far as saying that other theaters are doing this, it sounds like that you have a familiarity with others. And also, I understand that you have an association of these theaters across the country. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, basically what happened, you know, when Marty and I were working on the theater, and owning my own theater has been a dream of mine for some time. It was really crystallized when I was lecturing in Europe and in Germany in particular. And as I was going from town to town lecturing, some of the things I said, oh, we have a magic theater here in town. Do you want to see the theater? Yes, I want to see the theater. And some of these theaters were just beautiful. Munich and Nuremberg and, you know, bigger venues, smaller venues. And I said to myself, you know, why don't we have these in America? Well, then when I got back, I started to look around. We do have them in America. You know, you mentioned Joe Gibbon, a good buddy of mine. Joe's had the Theater of Dreams for, I don't know, 16, 17 years. Yeah. They're, you know, the Magic Castle is obviously the grandfather of all of them, is probably the first, the biggest. And, you know,
55 years.
The most well-known, mm-hmm. but I started to look around when we were opening, and I said, wow, there's a theater here, a theater there, and then finally I said to myself, because as you know, I'm an organizational kind of guy, I used to do, you know, the lecture tours, and I organized that business, which didn't have anything. I thought to myself, I wonder how many theaters are out there, so I started looking, and I said, you know, it's a loose organization, the Association of Magic Theater Owners. And I started to contact all the people. And so I have connected, basically, we have a Facebook group. It's a private group. You can go on Facebook. You won't find us. You won't see us. Because our group is only be of interest if you were the owner of a magic theater. If anyone's listening out there that owns one and that hasn't seen us, send me an email. We can add you to the list for sure. Because there's different things that we want to talk about that is not of interest to the public. We don't want to talk about, you know, the latest card trick or once in a while, but usually it's, what are you doing for advertising? How do you handle cancellations? What do you do if a performer canceled? Do you have an age limit on your show? Just, there's a million questions that we care about the answers, and you would only care if you owned the theater. But I've identified, I'm looking at my list right now. So the list in, I stopped at North America only because that's where I live. That's where my theater is. And yep. If I continued on with Europe and Asia, the list could have had many, many, many more. But in the United States, I've identified 50. And in Canada, I have 4 in Canada. So they're out there.
Now, these are obviously of different sizes. I mean, yours being kind of the average size or larger than most?
There is no average size, I don't believe. But I'd say we're 60 seats. 60 seats. Rich Blocks is 60 seats. Cosmo opened up one in Colorado. He's 60 seats. Joe is 72. So there's different sizes, but there's some that are smaller. The Red Spade in San Diego, I think they're 24 seats.
I think Wizards down in Kissimmee also is what, about 30 seats or so?
Yeah, that's a smaller one as well, too. I have not been to that one. I've been to many of these. Dwayne Laughlin has one that's 500 seats.
Wow. What about the Rick Wilcox Theater? Would that be one of them?
Yeah, Wilcox is on the list. He's, again, a much bigger venue. So they're all different sizes, different prices. They cater. Some are in tourist communities. Some are in areas where they just do their shows regionally, where they don't do it 52 weeks a year. Some of them, you know, jump up and do it when the tourists are there. So it depends on what your location is. And I have been to a number of these, performed at some of them as well, just to see when I was on my quest thinking about this. Well, you want to open something like this, it helps to see what other people. I went to Hawaii to see Warren and Annabelle's room and talk to them out there. And, you know, what they're doing in Hawaii is obviously different than what we could do in Philadelphia. It's different when they could do in there's one in Oregon. And, you know, they're all a little bit different.
Yeah, and just to differentiate the theaters versus those where people are just putting on their own show, let's say that the theater is different from, let's say, Steve Cohen's Chamber of Magic kind of a thing, because he's doing that in a hotel.
Yeah, it's really, and I do have a couple, you know, what I would call a four wall. The four wall is basically the term, for those that aren't familiar with it, means you're renting the four walls. So you would go to a theater, say, I want to rent your venue for this night, and you're in charge of selling the tickets and advertising, putting on the show, clean, doing everything, and you would pay the theater a fee. And so I do have a couple four walls operations in my list, but mainly I was really looking for a theater where people own their own venue. When I say own, it doesn't mean you have to. We rent. We didn't build our own building. We rent our space. But still, it's a dedicated theater for magic venue. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of those out there, and some, a couple of great ones, you know, just opened. The one in Chicago, the one in Nashville. So some.
Yeah, that's right. The House of Cards in Nashville just opened, and of course, the Chicago Magic Lounge, which is new.
Those are two venues, and House of Cards, I have talked to Jason just by email so far, the owner, so I haven't made it down there yet, nor have I made it out to Chicago, but Chicago looks like it's absolutely great what they're doing, but that's a whole different kind of animal. That's a much, much bigger venue with a restaurant and a bar and things of that nature. So that brings in a whole other can of worms to operate. And some people want a big venue like that. Some people just want a little bit smaller. And then there's a lot of venues. See, we are unique. And I don't want to say unique. I'm sorry. Unique is not right the word. But we are in the small minority of venues that bring in other talent. A lot of these magic venues have opened and the owner is the performer.
Yeah.
And like, that is
in, like Christian Painter in Catalina.
Right, Christian and Catalina, like Jay Alexander in San Francisco. So there's a number of people that have opened up a place like this. Peter Morrison, who used to own the place in San Francisco, now runs the Atlanta Magic Theater, where they have opened up theaters and they are the only performer. If they have a gig or need a vacation, they bring in someone to fill in for them when they're gone.
Yeah.
But our business model from day one was always not like that, was to bring in outside talent, and for a couple of reasons. One, I think I've had people that Marty and I, Marty Martin is my partner, for those that don't know, in the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. And when we were talking originally, I said a great customer would be someone that comes two times a year, maybe three times a year. That would be a great customer. We were trying to figure out how many customers do we need to sell out on a, you know, on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Well, I've already had people in 6 months that have been there 8, 9, 10 times.
Wow.
I don't think they would be there 8, 9, 10 times to come back and see the same show. I just don't think that would have happened. They might have come back maybe twice, but they would not have come back 8, 9, or 10 to see the same show. But because I've had Garrett Thomas does a great show. Oh, you got to see Harrison Greenbaumberry. Because I've had different unique people have, not everybody, but there are some, more than one, that have come back multiple times like that. So that's a decision that we made. And as we continue, our plan is to continue to bring in great performers.
So again, that goes back to what you were saying earlier, that they like your way of making pizza, because you're the one who makes the pizza and you choose the ingredients to go on that, as opposed to people bringing in their own ingredients to put on the pizza. So that'd be an analogy, I guess, of saying, hey, I'm handpicking the people I want because I know this is the group that will bring in a crowd, as opposed to maybe diluting it with others who might say, hey, I'm just looking for an opportunity to perform here.
Right, except for one thing you said. Nobody, you know, name will bring in a crowd.
Yeah.
Just really, you know, now there is then the crossover effect. Like we just booked Ozzy Wynn and Jeff McBride.
Yeah.
Two incredibly fabulous performers. Their name is so well named in the magic community that we will then start to see some of the magicians come in to buy tickets. But, you know, our goal when we opened, we said if a magician never bought a ticket, never visited the theater, mm-hmm. we have to be self-sufficient with selling tickets to the lay public. So that was always our strategy. If a magician
right.
buys a ticket to a show, it's a bonus. We had Ben Sideman.
I love Ben.
Yep. Is you know, I had a private gig that night, so I missed his show.
Wow.
And we did it on a Thursday because Ben's schedule didn't allow for a Friday or Saturday appearance. But I noticed, yeah. you know, certain people, I looked at his website and I saw, oh my God, he's playing at college right next to me and he's off the next day. So I twisted his arm a little bit and Ben came nice. To the theater. But we had, you know, David Crossero drove down from New York, Will Fern came down, and it was like a little, at least a good 15 or so magicians came to see that show because they know the quality of Ben Sideman.
Now, when the people come in also, do they join the theater? So, I mean, like the Magic Lounge, you can join. Then if you attend more often, you get a discounted price or something. So do you have some sort of a membership like that, too?
Yeah, we do. We have season passes where you can buy, you know, a block of six tickets, a block of 12 tickets, and get a discount on your events. We have a membership. We also, in addition to having the two theaters, we also have a magic shop. And to that end, we had a discount for magicians that they could buy a pass to get a discount at the shop and two free tickets to a show and a seat to a lecture and things of that nature. So we do have some other plans like that as well.
Okay. And just to kind of wrap up then also, what is the website where people can go to find more information?
Smokeandmirrorstheater.com.
Sounds like that's easy enough. And I can't let you go without talking about the Mindvention. Tell me what's coming up this year.
Ah, good old Mindvention. So Mindvention is the mentalism convention that we've been doing in Las Vegas for years and years and years. This, in fact, is the 15th. So we are really excited about that.
It's one of the best conventions. And also, whenever I post the daily updates from that from the convention, even though it is not attended, there's half the attendance there than there is at Factors. I mean, it seems like an exclusive group, but the amazing thing is I think I have more downloads for people interested in this convention than any other convention throughout the year. It's just phenomenal.
Well, yeah, mentalism is a really interesting topic. It's not a closed convention. You don't have to be a professional mentalist. If you're interested in mentalism in any way, shape, or form, you are welcome to attend. Mindvention.net is the website for that. And this year we've announced only two acts so far, but they're two great acts. The Evisons, the two-person mentalism duo that are just absolutely fabulous. And then from England, we have coming back Ken Dine, Kennedy.
Oh, I love him. Yep, I had him on a lecture tour this last year, and he was just a knockout.
Yeah, great performer. He's also going to be offering his workshop the day after the convention on the Wednesday on how to book more shows and become a more successful performer. And we'll be adding a number of great presenters to the mix, and it's a fabulous convention. And it's in Las Vegas. Might as well plug it all the way.
Yep.
October 21, 22, and 23. It's a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
And the hotel is?
The Palace Station, the luxurious Palace Station, totally redone and refurbed.
I recall that the last year convention that they closed the bar, the remodeling, has that been changed? They got a new bar hanging out?
The new bar will be open by the time our event will be there. There'll be a new movie theater. I'm hoping the Bowen Alley opens in time. So they've got a lot of stuff planned for the Palace Station. But, you know, it doesn't make a difference where you do the convention, because it's all about what happens in that room and at the coffee shop and at the bar, the talk and the camaraderie that happens between people that Mindvention is right. Their big convention that they love.
Right. Yeah, those late night hangout sessions are the best, you know, and closing the bar. That's great. All right. Well, good. Thank you again, Danny. I appreciate it, and I'm wishing you continued good luck with the theater, to you and Marty. And I hope that we get a lot more people who will come over and check out your theater, and also for those who have their own theaters to contact you about getting onto the Facebook page and learning more about how that they can increase their business and get some more attendance, sell tickets, et cetera.
Exactly. Thanks, Scott, for all you do for magic, my man. You're awesome.
All right. Hey, thank you, Danny. Right back at you. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Danny Archer and the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Danny. I appreciate the information that you imparted there. It was kind of interesting not only to find out what's been going on, of course, with your theater, but also some suggestions on how to market tickets if you have your own show and your own theater. Well, next up, we're going to be hearing from John Sturck and talking about the Chicago Magic Lounge, but I wanted to take this moment in between here just for a commercial message to remind people that this podcast is absolutely free, and I want to encourage you to please tell your friends, pass it on to your social media. It might even be a good topic for a Magic Club meeting some night to talk about the various magic podcasts that are out there, and be sure to mention the magic word, because there are a lot of people in around the world who just are not necessarily aware of podcasting. You know, what is this archive radio thing on the internet, or even about some of the magic podcasts that are out there. And again, there are a few, and we're all different as well. So I encourage you not just to listen to the magic word, but there are others that are very informative and educational and entertaining then as well. I would like for you to continue to support us by listening from week to week. And if you have an opportunity to go to the, if you listen on iTunes, to go to the iTunes store and give us a five-star rating and leave a comment. That is one way of really helping us. If you have the financial means to do so, we would certainly appreciate that support as well. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you'll find a tab where that you can click on that and you can find out more information on how to join. Well, I also want to say that we're going to, on the back of this podcast, announce the winner of this last week's contest, or I should say last week we were at Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, or Obie's 4F convention, but before that we had a contest running that was in the Greg Wilson podcast for a one of two of the Peak Packs, the decks by Brian Gillis. And I'm going to announce those winners later on in the podcast. But first, let's hear the second part of this podcast with my good friend and yours, Mr. John Sturck, talking about the Chicago Magic Lounge. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. And right now, I've got with me a good friend out of Chicago, and he's talking about something that is fairly new in Chicago, and that's the Chicago Magic Lounge. And I say new because they had an older location, and they've updated it, and now it's in a new place. And I want to find out what's been going on, because, again, the last time we talked, I spoke with two gentlemen, and they just had plans to get this place built. And since then, not only was that built, but it actually grew larger, and now they're in a new venue. That's the Chicago Magic Lounge. And so please welcome my friend, Mr. John Sturck. Hey there, John.
Hey, Scotty. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad to get to talk with you also. Well, the last time I spoke with you and Joey Cranford, and who actually owns the Magic Lounge, Chicago Magic Lounge?
Joey and his partner, Don Clark.
Don Clark, okay. Now, let's kind of go back a little bit. Again, when we first were talking, this was really just kind of in the planning stage, not the place where you are currently, but of the original one where you were then from before. And so kind of take me through what happened and how that grew or you outgrew it.
Well, I think the first time we talked was probably in early 2015.
Right.
And we were just about to launch our weekly show that we were going to call the Chicago Magic Lounge. It was located at a theater called the Uptown Underground. And we did the show once a week for the first year. And it got to be pretty popular. So the theater asked us to do twice a week. So we ended up doing Thursday nights and Saturday nights. And then not long after we started doing Saturday nights, we met Don, who approached us about becoming an investor. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
Right, right.
We broke ground on the building in the summer of 2017, June 2017. And construction went pretty quick, you know, as far as construction goes. And you'd think in Chicago there'd be a lot of red tape.
And
there
permits.
Was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was. But we got through it, and we opened at the end of February 2018, and it's going on, I think, 5-6 weeks now. So here we are.
Wow. Yeah. Now, when you say broke ground, of course, that this was a facility that was already there. It was a dry cleaners. Is that right?
The building was a commercial laundry. So they mm-hmm. had done – they would do the linens for, like, hotels and hospitals, and their business grew beyond the capacity of the building. So the building had been empty for several months, maybe a little over a year. I'm not exactly positive, but in any case, it was just kind of an empty, dilapidated building. And Joey and Don saw it and had the vision that it would be our place.
Yeah, really. You've taken the words out of my mouth. That was what I was going to say, because whenever I saw the original video of somebody that was kind of walking through this, it just looked like something that was a big rat trap in the middle of nowhere, and it was, you know, it looked horrible. And I thought, this is going to take a huge renovation and $1 million to renovate and put together. And it seems like that it was all done in record time. And I thought, boy, this is going to get just started but not finished. But man, from what that I have seen, although I've not personally visited there, you give me a video tour of it, and I've taken that. It just looks spectacular. And I know that the place you had before, kind of going back just a little bit, the one that you were doing before at the other location in, what was that called, Mid-Uptown or?
Uptown.
Yeah. Chicago, was in conjunction with the burlesque night. So you had something
that's
going on. Yeah.
That theater was founded and built by a burlesque troupe called Kiss Kiss Cabaret. So when they built it, it was built with doing burlesque shows in mind.
Right.
And they needed some other programming for other nights of the week, and that's where we came in. The downside for us as magicians were there was some obstructed viewing because of there were support beams. It was located in the basement of this building.
Right.
So there were support beams, some obstructed views. There was a large area of seating that was directly to stage left. So the performer would be like facing forward for most of the crowd, and then there would be some people on the left.
Over by the bar.
Over by the bar. And, you know, for a dancer, for burlesque, it wasn't such a big deal. But for a magician, when you're working one way and this group of people is to your left and even somewhat behind you, they don't have as good an experience as everybody else does.
Right, so of course, right.
When we had the chance to literally build this from the ground up, every seat in our theater is a great seat.
Yeah, whenever I had attended the original place, I remember going back afterwards. Of course, you had the close-up show in a separate room that was kind of behind the stage. And partway through the show, I heard some thumping and noise and everything. And I said, man, is that a club next door? And I said, no, the burlesque show is going on out front. So in other words, when the magic show is over, that is a stage show, then it kind of you continued on with the close-up show for a smaller group because it was limited seating. But you also had to compete with what was going on in the front room all of a sudden. Then you had to walk back through them to get out.
That's right. Yeah. So I mean,
a lot of challenges there.
Yeah, there were some challenges. Yeah. So I mean, we did the best that we could with the space that we had.
Yeah, and it did a fantastic job. Obviously, to the point where that you not only got another investor to think, hey, let's make this larger, but also had a following that would take you then to this next new venue, which, as you said, you've been sold out. I mean, Fridays and Saturdays are just all sold out.
Yeah, when my friends want to come, I tell them they've got to plan it 2 to 3 weeks in advance.
Yeah,
to make sure they get a seat.
And tell me a little bit about the theater again. I have taken the video tour over there, and I've not personally yet been there. But for those who are coming to visit, then tell me about the room or rooms that you got that are available.
Sure. Well, we have actually three performing venues in the building. It starts with the performance bar in the front of the building when you first enter. We always have a magician on duty when we're open in the bar, so anybody can come in while the bar's open. We usually open the bar at 5 o'clock and see magic and have some drinks without any reservations required. Then, if you want to come into the big room, which we have named the Harry Blackstone Cabaret, you buy your ticket, and then you can come into our 120-seat theater, which also features a row of mezzanine seating. And then that show, we have shows in there 7 days a week, really. Our signature show, which is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, features two acts on stage, as well as an hour of close-up at your table. So we have several table magicians working, along with two stage acts. And then, if that's not enough magic for you already, on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, you can buy an upgrade for your ticket for only $10, and you can come into the 654 Club, which is our exclusive close-up room, for another formal close-up show of about 25 minutes.
Wow. And there are two seatings, I guess, for the stage shows?
On Friday and Saturday, we do two shows.
Uh-huh.
Thursday, we feature only one. Wednesdays, we feature a one-man show with David Parr, who's a Penn & Teller fooler. David Parr presents his one-man show, Cabinet of Curiosities. That's every Wednesday. Monday and Tuesday, we do Music and Magic, where we feature a band or a vocalist on stage, along with table magicians. And then on Sundays, we do a special Sunday matinee that's family-friendly. As we really intended to do just adult sophisticated magic, But we got so many requests of, can I bring the kids? Can I bring the kids?
Right.
So we decided to make something for them, too.
So do you have a brunch? I mean, you have food and comes in? Or
we do have food. We feature light bar bites. Some of the menu is actually inspired by Shulian's, the original Magic Bar. So we feature some sausage and potato pancakes and things like that. So it's all like small plates.
But do you have a kitchen that prepares this, or is that something
we sure do.
Brought in? Okay. So that's just not catered in or whatever.
No. Yeah. No, we make it here.
Yeah. You mentioned David Parr, because I remember that he had his own show, he and P.J. Murphy before, and then P.J. left, and anyhow, that shows...
P.T. Murphy.
P.T.
Yep. And then later, P.T., he moved out of town, and Joe Diamond stepped in.
That's right.
To be David's partner for the Magic Cabaret, which was featured weekly. And then when we opened, and David Parr and Joe had done that show for quite a while.
Right, so exactly, a number of years.
You know, they decided to close that show, and both pursuing their own projects. We have David here every week. We have Joe Diamond here on a regular basis, too. So don't anybody think that it was like crazy drama between Joe and David. They're still very good buddies.
Of course, yeah.
But they're both pursuing their own projects, and we have them here at the Magic Lounge frequently.
Right. Now, as far as others who are wanting to come and perform, I would imagine that you get people contacting you two or three times a week, or at least a half dozen times a month.
Well, let's just say we do get inquiries.
And how do you go about selecting it? Do you book people based upon people who want to come, or do you kind of hand select, saying, hey, I want to have this
guy?
Well,
it's much more hand selective. And I'll tell you the truth, is we rely mainly on local talent.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot of good local talent to choose.
Yeah, we sure do.
Exactly.
So we're not really looking at flying in a lot of people. For our grand opening weekend, we brought in some heavy hitters. We brought in Arthur Trace and Max Maven, as well as Kayla Drescher and Alba. So that opening weekend was a bit of an exception. But for the most part, we stick with local, and if people are interested in submitting or to perform here, they can go up on our website at chicagomagiclounge.com and email in their video.
Okay. And you wouldn't necessarily be having someone do close up and the stage. It's kind of either or.
We might. It's really a case by case basis.
Depends upon who it might be that you want to choose.
It really depends on a number of factors, including availability.
Right. You know, I think that one of the interesting things, too, about the show, whenever I had visited to see it at your other location, was the type of talent that you had. I've been, of course, and performed at the Magic Castle, and I was a regular here at the Magic Island here in Houston. And one of the things that Scott Hollingsworth, who was the entertainment director at the Island, used to say is that if somebody was popular at a comedy club, he wouldn't necessarily book them, because the type of humor that they would use sometimes is not family friendly. It's a little vulgar. Or he said that some of our people think it's kind of silly. You know, the point is, now, of course, that was many years ago. Times have changed and tastes have changed, and certainly audiences have changed. And so I was, I guess, a little surprised whenever I saw the magicians perform and heard that it was more, I wouldn't say risque, but I would say it was not something that would be on your normal network television shows. It was hilarious. It was very funny. It was not rude. It was not adult, but they used some adult language. And so I think that that's kind of interesting as well, the direction of where that you're going with this. I mean, I wouldn't say it's edgy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it goes back to our mission in bringing back the Chicago style of magic.
Okay.
And that was always very reliant on comedy. I mean, prime example is our good friend Bill Malone.
Sure.
Who uses a lot of comedy in his magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then when going on stage, you know, we wanted to be to really challenge the paradigm, if I can use that word.
Yep.
Of your average person who still, even in the era of David Blaine and Chris Angel, still automatically assume that magic is kid stuff.
Yes. Good point.
I think it was Max Maven who said the greatest feat of magicians of the 20th century was to take something profound and render it trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, trivial or not, we wanted to show that magic is more than, you know, the birthday magician, more than just the kid stuff.
Right.
So that's why we when we have our performers, we encourage them to play to the top of their intelligence.
There we go. I love that line. Yeah, play to the top of your intelligence. Uh-huh. And that of the audience as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not taking advantage of them. I mean, you recognize them as being a sentient being. That was something I always appreciated with Penn and Teller, that they just are saying people recognize that this is just, these are just tricks. You know, they don't believe in magic. And so let's have, you know, putting that aside, okay, there are these gimmicks that magicians use, but let's have some fun. So it's just, you know, again, they treat the audience knowing that they are intelligent beings and go from there. And so I think that's what your performers need to know also. Or, I mean,
yeah,
they do.
And,
do. I mean, those
and we're want. And we're, you know, it's a nightclub.
Sure. There you go.
There's the booze is flowing. The audience is excited to be here.
Yeah.
People are on dates. So, you know,
right.
We'll just play to that.
Now, when the people are performing also, do they normally get booked just for the weekend, or do they get booked like for like 2 weeks in a row or something? Or
well, Scotty, it really depends.
Yeah.
I can't comment too much on
all
that.
Right.
It's really a case by case.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense also.
Yeah.
I would think like if somebody happens to be in town and they let you know, or you hear that, hey, so-and-so is coming, hey, we need to get them, or they're going to be here for a trade show, you might get them for a couple of weeks or something. You know, I understand it's case by case. So it's not something that they would have a contract for a period of time. That's understandable. Yeah. And in that regard, going back to this, the Sunday matinees that you have, and you say it's family friendly. So you encourage the youth to come, or people to bring their kids?
Yep, absolutely. We encourage we bill that as a family friendly, all ages, show.
Right.
So many of the performers who work on our stage in the evenings, are also accomplished kids show performers.
Right.
Notably Danny Orleans.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Has put out a lot of material.
Good
he's
example.
He's got his Amaze Kids company. So we had Danny on our stage in the evening, and then he came back and did a Sunday family matinee.
Yeah.
And let me say too, watching Danny was incredible. He's such a great performer.
Yes.
And I told him after the show that I was really happy to see him practice what he preaches in his publications. So, and the family shows have been going very well. I mean, I got to do the first one, and we had, you know, 45 people for our very first family show on that first weekend.
Yeah.
With very little in the way of advertising or promotion. And then, you know, not 2 weeks later, we were in the up to 90, and the room only holds 120.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an underserved market as far as family magic goes.
It's a good thing that you opened up that Sunday afternoon, sounds like, for the matinee. That's been a very successful thing for you. That's good.
It has been.
Yeah. Now, as far as advertising and selling tickets and getting people's butts in the seats, I mean, that's something, first of all, that you kind of knew this was, that you were bringing an audience with you. You kind of had a built-in group or groupies, I guess, who were with you, who followed from the old location to the new one. But then you were also in a good location from before, as from what I recall, uptown there was kind of in a young urban type of yuppie area. And so is that still the same kind of an area where you're located then now?
Yes. I think it's the Andersonville neighborhood is very lively here.
Okay.
And the business community has been very welcoming to have us here. And the particular block where we are, there's not a lot of other nightlife happening.
Oh.
A few blocks, we're kind of on the south end of the main drag of Andersonville.
Gotcha.
But things have been going great. And
but as far as advertising tickets and dealing in marketing, I guess, you know, what is it, or how do you reach your audience to get new people to come in all the time?
Well, we have done a lot of things that we rolled over from the old place. We do a lot of social media. We have our mm-hmm. Facebook page, which is very active.
Right.
We also have collected emails from everyone who's bought tickets. So we do email marketing on a regular basis. When we opened our new building, we engaged a PR company, a publicist, to mm-hmm. help us get the word out. So the first week that we opened, we did a lot of media, a lot of TV. journalism interviews. Joey had a great picture in Time Out magazine, Chicago, that he's very proud of, and he should be. Mm-hmm. So things like that. And I'll tell you what really does matter is Yelp and TripAdvisor reviews.
Oh, that's good.
A lot of times when I'm performing at the tables, I will say, well, guys, thanks for coming in. How'd you hear about us? TripAdvisor is a very popular answer.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Now, another thing that you have is the membership. It's available.
Yes.
Could you talk about that? And because I think once somebody feels that they are a part of this group and it's their member, then they are more likely to attend also. I mean, that's kind of a nice kind of a marketing angle that you've got there.
Right. So that's actually one of my duties is I've been officially given the title of chairman of the roundtable. So some of your listeners might be familiar with the famed Chicago Magic Roundtable, which was an informal collection of magicians who would meet on a regular basis for lunch in the downtown Chicago area. At the time, in the 50s and 60s, there were over a dozen magic shops in the downtown area alone. Mm-hmm. So as magicians came through town and as the magicians got off work for their lunch, they would meet and just commiserate and have a good time.
Yeah.
And it grew and grew. So the people who attended the roundtable has grown. There's a lot of famous names in there. People like Vernon dropped in when he was in town. Jay Marshall, Werner Dornfield. There's a famous pencil drawing by Salvatore Sala. There's a giant one of it hanging in the Magic Castle mm-hmm. out near the Jack Oakey ladies' room in the basement of the castle. But this group kind of petered out in the 60s and 70s, and the roundtable was no more. In the 2000s, there was a resurgence of the roundtable with people like Eugene Berger and Tracy Atterbury and David Parr, and that was, another informal club. It wasn't like an SAM or an IBM where you had to pay dues, and there were minutes and business meeting and motions and all this stuff. But it was just, hey, let's get together over dinner and talk magic. Mm-hmm. And that lasted quite a while. In fact, I was participated in that a couple times toward the end of its life at the end of the aughts. And then that just kind of went away. People found other lives, other things to do with their time. So when we reopened, we wanted to have some way for magicians to be a part of the community that we were building and to, because so many of them wanted to support us in ways other than just, you know, buying a ticket.
Right.
So we came up with the resurgence, the third generation of the Chicago Magic Roundtable, which is a bit more formalized than the original. So we have a yearly dues assessment, but with that you get a number of benefits, including a discount on food and drink, things like we have a private members-only section with felt-top tables for people to just hang out in. It overlooks the performance bar. We'll let you into the show if there's room. If we have any unsold seats, we'll be happy to let our Magic Roundtable members have those seats. And then occasionally we do some special events that for members only. So instead of doing a traditional lecture, for example, our opening weekend when we had Max Maven here, we featured a Saturday afternoon Q&A with Max Maven. Because all I wanted to do was – I mean, he's published so much, and I wanted to have something other than just the traditional teach-a-trick lecture.
Right.
So I thought, wouldn't it be great to find out what's on Max Maven's mind for a change instead of him reading ours? So we spent 2 hours in here. We had 50 people in attendance, including Dick Bowman, the national president of the SAM, who came to visit us for our opening weekend. 50 people here in the close-up room in the 654 Club, just picking Max's brain, and it was terrific.
Wow, that's a great idea.
So that's my long way of saying there's a new community that we wanted to build and give people a way that they could help and support the Magic Lounge. And so the Chicago Magic Roundtable is what we came up with.
I think it's also cool that you have your local assembly now who meets in this location too.
Yes. So as you know, Scotty, I served as president of our Assembly 3 for a couple years. And one of the regrets that I had during my administration was that I couldn't find a venue in the city of Chicago for us to have our meetings. The IBM, the SAM, and all the independent clubs, all of them meet in the suburbs of Chicago, and none actually meet in Chicago. And I saw that as a barrier to membership growth, especially a barrier to youth membership growth. So the Magic Lounge has let us move our meeting location here. And we've only had one meeting here so far. In fact, we have another meeting coming up. So I'm really excited that we're able to bring the Chicago Assembly back to Chicago.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it sounds like the club is really going well. And also, by the way, that you kind of skipped over something I think was kind of cool, and that is the very opening. When people come to find the Magic Lounge, it's kind of indiscreet as far as like almost like a speakeasy. So talk about how they actually find the front door and then get into the inner sanctum.
Well, it says 50-50. There's a sign outside that says 50-50 North Clark. What else do you really want? I mean, okay, so it's no secret at this point. So we have, because the building used to be a commercial laundry, we've sort of fashioned the entrance to the building to be a laundromat.
Yeah.
And inside the laundromat, you have to find the secret activation for the door, and then the door opens, and then you can enter the club.
That's very cool. Very cool. That was kind of reminds
no
me.
Hints, but no hints, Scotty.
No, I'm not. I was going
to
say
you're going to have to figure it out when you get here.
There was another club, I think, in Chicago that was similar to one in Milwaukee. That was like a secret agent club or something.
Oh, the Safe House.
Safe House, one of my favorite bars in the world.
The Safe House in Milwaukee, which also featured a magic bar, by the way, which does.
Yeah.
And then the Safe House, funnily enough, opened a second location in Chicago last year.
Yeah. Because I had seen on Instagram that Scott Xavier was performing over there for a while. I don't know if he still does or not. But anyhow, yeah, I've not been to the one in Chicago, but I have been to one over in Milwaukee, and it was a lot of fun. Same kind of thing that you have to – there's a secret way of getting in, basically, let's just say. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that sounds like just a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to coming there. And so, again, just to wrap up this, for people who want to find out more information about coming to attend or see a show, they should certainly write in advance, but they can find out more information by going to your website at
ChicagoMagicLounge.com.
There you go.
It's where we – the city where we are, the stuff we do, and then lounge.
I like that. Very good. Johnny, thanks very much. I appreciate it. And
thank you, Scotty. I hope to see you around some conventions later this summer.
I know we will. And so from the Magic Lounge and the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Stirk, and this is Scotty Out. Thank you, John, for giving us an update on what's been going on with the Chicago Magic Lounge. Now, listeners, you need to go and check this out. I have not personally been there, but before we began the podcast, John gave me a visual tour. We kind of did a FaceTime tour, basically, in which he took his phone and showed me a walking tour of the place. And I must say, gosh, it was amazing. He took me all the way in the back and to see the lockers and places where that the guys can keep their stuff overnight and whatnot for. But the stage, the theater, the whole venue, just and the bar just looks tremendous. The library, the front door, where you walk in, the lobby, et cetera, et cetera. It looks tremendous, and I'm sure that in person it is even more jaw-dropping, I should say. I wish I could be up there so I could be a member and join the Chicago Magic Lounge and be part of the Chicago Roundtable. It really sounds like a great organization, certainly. So if you get a chance to get to Chicago, you have to stop by there. And of course, if you're going to be in the Philadelphia area, you got to go and see the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. Now, as I mentioned, these were just a couple of the theaters that I'm aware of that, I'm aware of a lot of theaters around the country, and I would like to talk with various theater owners. And if you want to contact me, please do, and I'll see if I might be able to set up some sort of a Skype call, and we can talk about that. Just contact me, Scott, at the Magic Word Podcast. magicwordpodcast.com, because I'd like to find out more about your theater, but more importantly to the listeners, not only about if they're going to be touring in that area or be a tourist in that area to stop by and see your show, but not only that, to give some wisdom to the listeners who, for them to have an idea about how that they can also create their own venue if they want to have their own theater, how to sell tickets, how to put people in your theater, how to market, etc., like these gentlemen had shared with us then today also. So again, thank you, Danny, and thank you, John, for your help and for your words over here in this week's podcast of The Magic Word. Well, I know we're running just a little bit longer than our usual one-hour podcast, but I do think that we can probably slip in one review, and I think this is a good one that I'd like for you guys to know about. And this is, again, another product that is available from Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can purchase from your favorite magic dealer. This review, a lot like the trick itself, is a quickie. It's called Sharpie Through Bill by Alan Rorison, and it's produced by Sans Minds. Now, like with many Sans Minds effects, as I've talked about in the past, it is awfully angly. And the good thing about this is that Sans Mind has gotten to the point where that on their DVDs, on their products that they sell, they do tell you whether the skill level that's required and also the audience management and also the performance angle. In this case, it's a 180-degree angle because there are bad angles from the sides and the back. The idea is this, a bill that is folded in half and you place a Sharpie in there. You have a in the fold, basically. You can show it all the way around, both sides. Take out the Sharpie, hand the Sharpie to someone. They sign their initial. You recap. You put the pen back in the, quote, fold of the bill. And then you you hold it from the top with your fingertips, showing that the bill still has the Sharpie encased in the fold there, basically. And then very cleanly, with your right hand, you grab a hold of the cap of the pen and slowly rip the pin through the bottom of the bill, pop the bill open, and it is fully restored with no problem whatsoever. And it is a borrowed bill you can give out. The Sharpie is ungimmicked, nothing to see there. It's a very good impromptu kind of a thing. And most magicians do tricks with Sharpies, and this is something that you can add to your Sharpie. And it is fairly easy to do. It does have, I said, some angle problems. And I say fairly easy, it does require some practice. It's not something that you're going to do immediately. And also the cool thing is that it is not a prop that you buy. What you get here is a DVD, and it explains how to make the prop, and that you can make several of these if you wish. And it is no more than the cost of the Sharpie. It's something that you build in. And so I'll just kind of leave it at that. It's very clever. This is based upon the Timothy Wink idea called Misled, which you are familiar with. And again, I've seen David Copperfield do probably on television many years ago, that basically a pencil is placed in the fold of the bill, and then it is pulled through, and it's just that clean. Actually, this is, in my opinion, cleaner than the pencil. Nice little trick, something I would recommend. Fairly inexpensive, easy to make, not easy to do, but looks fantastic. It has a good visual image, and something that, for you YouTubers, if you want to have something from the camera angle, just straight on, it looks fantastic. From the side, it looks okay too, but the extreme sides, not so good. But aside from that, I think it's a very good trick, and I recommend it. Again, it's called Sharpie Through Bill. This product, like others that have been reviewed here on the Magic Word Podcast, are available through themagicwordpodcast.com. If you go to the website, and there you'll just click on the tab for Magic Store, and you'll see a screen that will open up, and that way that you can order any of these items. They're also available from any other of your favorite magic dealers, but surely by now you know that your favorite magic dealer has to be the Magic Word Podcast. And of course, that by supporting us through your purchases, that's another way of helping keep the Magic Word Podcast on the air and free for all. So again, these are thanks to Murphy's Magic Supplies, who have supplied us with these effects. So this way you kind of have a chance to review them for you, and they are my honest reviews. I hope that you enjoy them and that they are beneficial in your purchasing decisions. A couple of weeks ago, we had a podcast with Gregory Wilson, which was number 417. And he talked about his peak pack that is available from Secret Source and also, of course, from your favorite magic dealer here, the Magic Word Podcast, but also was created by Brian Gillis. And Gregory was nice enough to offer two of these decks for prizes to a couple of lucky winners. And so we left the contest open while I was in New York for the 4F convention, and we had 100 people to register and enter the contest from all around the world. As I said, that this was something that if you resided outside the U.S., that you would pay for postage, but internal domestic postage would be free. And so we had a couple of winners. And so I would like to announce those winners, who are David Woodrow and Mark McDermott, better known by his stage name, Mark Allen. Congratulations, David and Mark. Your peak packs will be going out this week. Thanks for entering the contest. Thanks for listening, and please share the word. Well, I think that's probably a pretty good wrap for this week. We've had a pretty full episode again here, and I hope that you have enjoyed it. I've had a good time presenting this for you, and also that I do have a newsletter which goes out on a regular basis, and when you enter the contest, then you can automatically register your email address to be signed up for the newsletter. And with that, of course, we just will let you know when each podcast is going to be released and what it's going to be about. So this way that will remind you, just in case that you haven't subscribed to The Magic Word, to make sure that you go and listen to this week's podcast and a little bit about behind the scenes and what's being offered then this week. So if you would like to do that, first of all, the best thing is just to subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast. If you would like to be on the newsletter list, then just drop me a note. That's scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and go out and enjoy the theater. This is Scotty out.